Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm pumped to introduce you to these two hilarious comedians whose clips you can find on Dry Bar Comedy. They are Andy Beningo and Bill Baronke. Andy has been named one of the 40 best up-and-coming comedians in the country, as well as best comedian by the Detroit Metro Times and Detroit Hour Magazine. He's appeared on AXS Gotham Comedy Live, CMT's Next Big Comic, and his Dry Bar Comedy special, Adorable Tough Guy, has generated over 5 million views on social media. Andy has been a guest on Larry the Cable Guy's weekly roundup XM Sirius Radio and regularly tours with Frank Caliendo. Bill Baronke has been seen on Funny or Die, featured on Comic Scene, and performs everywhere at clubs, colleges, corporate events, churches, Pennsylvania prisons, where he has been heckled by a service dog, Funny Bones, Improvs, Catch a Rising Star, the Laughing Skull Festival, and a renovated suburban attic. In early 2020, Dry Bar Comedy released Bill's first stand-up special. Baronke's been heard on ESPN Radio and radio stations across the U.S. and also hosts and is creator of the web series, The Fired Sports Guy. Welcome to the show, Bill and Andy. It's great to have you both on today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. This is going to be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. I got an email from you, Andy, and that's how this relationship started. And I don't, you know, you could just have those kind of hit it off immediately relationships. And that's kind of how it felt like it was from us from the jump for us. And the same with you, Bill. This has just already been fun. And I cannot be more excited to share with the laughers, you two wonderful people.
Weird thing about it is Andy and I hate each other.
Can't stand them. So we'll see what happens on the show.
But we get along with everyone else.
Okay, good. All right.
It's so weird though, because yeah, I had a friend of mine who heard you on a podcast and obviously working clean and doing clean events. He told me, hey, reach out to, Dawn and maybe you guys can hook up on a show or something. And it's so funny because usually when you send emails out to people, you generally don't hear anything back. You know, a lot of unanswered emails. And so not only was I excited that you responded, but it was such a lovely conversation. And I'm excited. It's always nice to make new friends. And we're going to have some fun for sure.
We are going to have a lot of fun today. Comedians are some of my favorite people, and none of their stories are alike on how they get started. And I want to begin with that and ask each of you how you both got started in stand-up comedy. And Andy, we'll begin with you.
Yeah, so believe it or not, it started off as kind of a bucket list thing in college. I always wanted to try it, but unfortunately extremely painfully shy just talking to people one-on-one. And so I kind of did it in college, and I just remember the first show I ever did, it was like an open mic. So it was like any student could do anything. So people read like poems, people played like guitars, and one guy was like a rapper. He went up and just rapped horribly. And so I took the opportunity to do stand-up, and just from the very first time I did it, I just fell in love with it, and I just kind of felt like, oh, this is something I kind of want to do forever. It didn't go great, but in my mind it did. So I skipped class for like a week because I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a famous comedian. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to have my own HBO special. And then I did like another stand-up set like a month later and bombed like so hard. Like it was like no laughs. People were staring at me. And so it just kind of made me realize like, oh, you got to really like work hard at this. And so just when I was finishing up college, I kind of took a comedy class in Ann Arbor. It was taught by a guy named Chili Chalice, who wrote for The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And so he kind of just helped me figure out how to write. And, he's very nice. He used to take me on the road when I first started. And eventually just kind of snowballed into a career. So I've just been having as much fun as I can. And, certainly it's fun to look back at some of the older shows and you know, just see how it's improved over the last, whatever, 10 years or whatever. So just been having as much fun as I can, I guess.
Now, Andy, before we get to you, Bill, I had a question about the very first time that you performed in college doing stand-up. Did you just get up there and speak, or did you have some ideas that you wrote down? Did you have a set that you already had written out?
Yeah, so it was basically, I always feel like comics write about what they know. So my act was like living at home with my parents, cafeteria food, you know, hey, what's the deal with morning classes? Like, it was all just very like college driven. So when I went to like my first actual open mic in a actual comedy club, well, like probably 80% of it didn't work because it was all like, you know, hey, I took a 6 o'clock in the morning class. Anybody else? And they're all like, no, we're adults. We've been out of college for, you know, 15 years or whatever. So kind of helped me realize like, oh, you got to find something more. But I think that's kind of what the best comics do, is they kind of write about their lives. And so that's kind of all I knew at the time. You know, it's like, they kind of say that a lot of times, a lot of comics, when they're starting off, all they talk about is like Taco Bell in college, because, you know, when you're 20 years old, that's all you know. But it's fun to see how the act has changed as, you know, I've gotten married and had kids. You know, it's like I'm just writing about kind of my life now. But the early days, it was very niche. Only college kids pretty much got it. But that's pretty much it.
All right. How about you, Bill? How'd you get started?
It was weird. I always loved comedy. I went to a comedy club and some young kid came up talking about, oh, I took a 6 o'clock class. And I thought, oh, this is easy. Yeah, actually, it's funny. It's something I was always jealous of comedians. But I actually had a pretty decent career going at the time. I was a TV sportscaster. And one time, when you're on TV, you get all these offers to do things. Not really cool podcasts, but there weren't podcasts back then. but anyway, so there was this company and they wanted me to host some event or whatever. I'm like, all right. And they said, you know, do like 15 minutes up top and then just go through the awards. And I was all excited. I'm like, I'm finally going to do stand up, but I kind of have a safety net and I got to use a podium and notes. And so I wrote, and what I thought was, I just wrote constantly. And my first joke hit. And, you know, that's like just such a rush of adrenaline. Second joke hit. I'm like, this is awesome. And I went through and finished. And then I did the awards. And I thought I wrote like 15, 20 minutes. It must have been like 3. And they're like, I like the way you kept it moving. I'm like, oh, this looks like it's really hard. So I didn't touch it again for ages. And finally, my career kind of stalled. And I'm like, I'm going to take a workshop and see what happens. And similar to Andy's thing, the first one went great. And the guy that ran the workshop's like, you can do this. It's going to take a lot of hard work, but you can make it. I'm like, I'm killing it. And then, kind of like Andy's, a couple days later, I went up and did another show. Nothing. Horrible. Awful. And that began the whole journey.
Wow. That's really awesome. You know, this is a really cool relationship the two of you have that I'm looking forward to hearing more about. Because, Andy, you live in Michigan,
yep.
And Bill, you live in New Jersey, yet you all are traveling together quite a bit to do comedy. So how did your paths cross, and how long have you guys been on the road together?
I think, if I have it correct, we met in Bowling Green. I used to live in Cleveland. And Andy, wasn't that it? It was the Bowling Green bar show where the owner heckles you?
Oh, well, my gosh.
That's what's so funny is we've talked about many times, like we just started hanging out a lot on the road, and we were kind of trying to backtrack, like, where did we actually meet each other at? It was like, we were going through, like, was it this club? No, I feel like it was this place. But yeah, I think that's what we kind of came up with, was there was an old club in Bowling Green. It was a college bar. So I crushed like all the time there because
that's 6 a.m. classes, you know.
They related the material. I'm like, this is great. But yeah, there was the owner would sit in the back of the room. And if it didn't go well, you just hear him go, boo, boo. It's the owner like heckling you on stage. But
so sophisticated, yeah. Heckling there.
Oh, it's top notch, top notch. Bowling Green's finest. But I kind of got asked to headline probably faster than I should have. you know, a lot of times I only had like 40 minutes. And so I kind of knew Bill was kind of at the same level as I was when I was starting. So it was like one of those things where, you know, you got to fill 90 minutes on a show, you know? And so I would always kind of call him to basically split the time with him. And then, you know, he would do his time, and I'd always be kind of doggy paddling to try to finish up my 45 or 50 minutes, whatever I could think of. But I think comedy is always fun, but obviously when you get to travel with your friend, it makes it even better. So I've been very lucky that, I think it's been almost like 10 years already that we've been kind of doing stuff. And just always have such a fun time with Bill when I'm traveling.
Yeah, it's kind of funny in that basically we were both familiar with different markets. So we were kind of introducing each other to the clubs we already had ins with, which actually helped me a lot more than it helped Andy, because he was further along. I mean, he's not the horrible comedian you see in front of you now. He was actually good then. So, no, I totally made out much better for this relationship. And fortunately, recently, I've been able to get him in front of some places I work where he got to make much less money than he's worth. So I feel like I've really paid him back.
Do you have a comment on that, Andy?
I'll just let it sit there and make it on. We worked a couple of clubs recently, and like I said, it's just sometimes it's more fun just hanging out than doing the actual shows. So, like I said, it's always fun hanging with Bill, and it's so fun to watch again. If you go back from 10 years ago, what his show was like to what it is now. I mean, not only is it stronger, but it's fun to watch. You know, I'm always impressed with guys that write stuff. So it just seems like every time I work with Bill, he's got, you know, new bits, and it sort of motivates you to write, because you go, oh man, if he's writing, you know, I gotta, you know, step up my game a little bit. So it's a nice, not only a friendship, but a good motivator to kind of keep doing, the things that you're supposed to be doing. So it's been fun for sure.
And along those lines, one of the cooler things, and it's so funny because Andy, I don't know if you had this experience. I don't know if we ever talked about it, but so many comedians talk about it. It happened with me. You start out with this group and then people just start falling out, and all of a sudden you're the last one.
Yeah.
And so when Andy and I kind of started becoming friends or working together, it's also someone to bounce things off of. When I was doing that Fired Sports Guys video series, Andy wrote half of them without him knowing it, because I'll write a thing and send it, hey, what do you think? And then he'll be like, oh, you could do this here. I'm like, oh, that's much better than what I thought. And if I can ever get someone to do my work and let me take credit, I'm all about it. So that worked out great. But the funny thing is, when you're traveling the road a lot, the hardest part isn't finding someone funny to work with. It's finding someone funny to work with that you can actually travel with and get along with, because you spend so much time together. And Andy pushes the limits because he doesn't understand that some of us aren't as cold-blooded as him. And he'll run the air conditioner when it's like 40 degrees driving to the UP in Michigan. And stuff like that. But yeah, it just makes the whole thing more fun.
The travel has even changed a little bit, because it's like when you're starting off, you're not making as much money. So it's like, well, hey, let's just share a hotel room. We'll get a couple of beds or something. About the third time snoring, you know, him listening to me snore, it's like, yeah, let's just get our own room. It works out easier. Let's do it that way. And so, no, like I said, it's always been fun hanging on the road. And again, I remember Seinfeld said that too. He said, you know, there's so many funny people, but eventually people just quit and get regular jobs. And that's kind of true. It's like there's so many talented people that you start with, and then all of a sudden they just drop out for whatever reason. So it's fun, like I said, to see, you know, Bill always started off really well, but it's fun to watch how much he's grown. And he was headlining last weekend the shows, and you know, I think he broke an hour without breaking a sweat, and he came off going, oh, I forgot this, I forgot that. And so it's always always fun watching people get better, and just always impressed with the volume of material he has. So yeah,
that's really a testimony to your friendship as well as working relationship, that you can challenge each other in that way and also have a lot of fun. I do hear that though, Bill, on the air conditioner being 40 degrees. This is what happens when you travel with people from Michigan.
Yeah, and here's the worst part. You usually think that the driver has control. So I'm like, I'm in the passenger seat and I'm freezing. I'm like, well, I kind of brought it on myself because I let him drive. You know, he volunteered to drive. But then even when I was driving, somehow he had control of the thermostat, which is kind of like my girlfriend. And I don't really understand that. I thought driver rules.
I was the only guy that packs a winter coat for a summer tour, you know, because we're in the car and it's like 30 degrees. And I'm still going, man, it's so hot in here and you're wrapped in a Snuggie or something.
I see my new scarf.
You know, I lived in Lansing, Michigan for 7 years, and my son was in elementary school at the time, and it was not uncommon at all to see a bunch of Michigan kids. It's 20 below outside, and they're sitting there with their basketball shorts on and a light jacket.
Oh yeah, that's awesome too. Especially when I was a kid, we used to go play pond hockey and it'd be like 6 feet of snow and we'd be out there in, short sleeved shirts and no coats and got the hockey gloves on and the hat and, I don't know if that's just a Michigan thing or what, but.
No, this was one of my favorite things. When I was a sportscaster and I worked for a local station, I had to go cover like high school sports. And one of my favorite things to do is when I was in Cleveland, and it gets horrible there, is you have all those kids acting tough, shirtless with the school thing painted on their chest, and you shoot them early in the game. And it was always funny to sneak shots of them later in the game when they're freezing and they didn't know the cameras were on. That's the kind of thing that brought me joy.
Yeah, that reminds me, Bill, you used to be a TV sportscaster. You're alluding to that a little bit. What made you want to get into that career, and what was your very first job?
Actually, my first job was radio.
Okay.
I thought I'd go in there and transition. I shouldn't have had any water. Usually it's vodka and it's fine. No, it's one of those where, you know, shockingly, I kind of realized I wasn't going to make it in the NFL. And so I thought, I don't know what's funny about that, Don. Thank you. And so I thought sportscasting would be really cool. It's hard to get into, blah, 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 blah. excuse me. Yeah. So it's very similar to the comedy journey. It's like go to a small market, work your way up, work your way up, work your way up. And work a lot of weird things that you don't think would ever happen. There's this one. It was I was working in Bridgeport, West Virginia. And before I got into sports, I was hosting the morning news show. And it was such a quality operation that before we would go on the air, the janitor would put down his mop and run audio. Yeah. And you couldn't hear a thing, but our microphones were lemon fresh. So eventually, though, the wheels kind of fell off that career, and it finally got to the point where it was like, well, I don't have to worry about credibility or any of that. Not that I ever had any. And so it was just like, well, I always want to try this. Let me try it. And then, you get hooked. I mean, you remember the first time you got a big laugh from a bunch of strangers? It's such a rush.
Yes.
And then you keep chasing it. And someday I'll get that second laugh, but I'm still chasing it.
But you are very funny, and you have done that on a lot of arenas. You are right now also hosting the nationally syndicated show Cruise In on Fox Sports. What's that?
I said I'm a big shot.
Yeah. We're staying humble. I get it. Well, what's that show all about, though? And how did you land that gig?
I actually started talking about it on stage because it is kind of funny. And that the producer of the show and I were he was a subcontractor for a place I worked. And he had a host. The first host was great, but the first host got too busy. And then he would ask me for suggestions on someone to host, and I was too busy. So it was just like understood. And finally, I was like, why don't I just do it? And he's like, yeah, we'll fill it in whenever you come back to town because it's in Ohio. But the funny thing is, you think car show and you're like, oh man, I'm gonna go to the Detroit car show, New York car show. Basically, you go to parking lots in mostly in Ohio and Pennsylvania, those backyard park car shows where people just show up and they sit in lawn chairs in front of their cars and talk about them.
Yeah.
Sounds like the most stupid thing in the world. And it is so much fun. It's shockingly a good time. So I'm hanging out with Grandpa in front of his 57 Packard. And it's just like talking to a spokesmodel in front of a concept car. I really don't see the difference. Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun, though. And you see the weirdest stuff. My favorite one is because there's all this just dream cars from when you were a kid. Everyone has a story. And this one guy had an 83 Yugo. And I'm like, oh. And you're probably too young to know what a Yugo is.
But I don't even know. Yeah.
Voted one of the 10 worst cars made of all time. But they still sold because you could get them for $4,000. And my favorite thing is the guy's like, I wanted one. I couldn't afford it when they came out. And I'm like, it was $4,000 in like 83. It's yeah. Like trade in down payment. What's your monthly payment? Like $1.50. So yeah, it's just actually really cool. You see all sorts of weird things and I'll talk about it on stage unless of course I forget.
Yeah. Do you know a lot about cars?
No. A friend of mine, when he started watching it, he used to watch the show before I started hosting it. He goes, I love you hosting because when you ask questions, I can tell you have no idea.
What's happening?
I'm your guy.
That's fantastic.
Oh, isn't it?
Well, you probably know more than the spokesmodel, I would imagine. Maybe.
Yeah, but I don't look good in my dress.
That's fantastic. Now, Andy, you tour with Frank Caliendo, who's mega hilarious and known for his sports personality impressions. I love them. What's your favorite one that he does? You just never get tired of hearing.
Yeah, it's so crazy because I remember when I was in college, I remember seeing his Comedy Central special and just being blown away by just his talent. I mean, he does so many voices and does them so well. And so it's kind of nice that life is kind of that long that, you know, you grew up watching him on TV. And then, you know, the fact that I know him, it's going already like 10 years, I think I've been working with him. So, yeah, I think my favorite is, of course, the John Madden one's always great, you know, from the NFL. And then for some reason, he always makes me laugh when he does his Jeff Goldblum. He does it very quickly in his act and just it always makes me laugh. But yeah, it's been such a blast working with him. You know, you get to obviously perform in a lot of clubs that, you know, he probably, you know, looking around going, I shouldn't be here, you know? So it's, always kind of nice, but, yeah, it's, just a fun act watching him. And he's a guy that's always working on new stuff, always working on new voices. You know, he's probably could have phoned it in on that John Madden thing forever. But every time I work with him, he's, you know, tweaking something or working on somebody and trying to find, you know, who's relevant in, you know, like entertainment or sports. And then, you know, within a couple of days, couple of shows, he's got it down, you know, perfect. So it's, kind of intimidating how good he is actually at it, you know, and he's also got an Andy Beningo impression, which
yes, that's the one. I was going to cut in if you didn't mention that.
Yeah.
So, what? That's great.
Yeah, we've worked together so much that he's kind of the cadence. It's just a lot of head bobbing and a lot of like shrugging and drives me crazy every time he does it. It makes me so mad, but yeah, it's pretty funny, I guess.
When you guys are just hanging out, I mean, or is he doing an impression of you after you go before him?
On stage, yeah, on stage, because we look similar. So he kind of does the, hey, who thought Andy was me? And it always gets a laugh. And then he kind of, you know, just kind of impersonates me for a minute or two. And, you know, the crowd usually laughs pretty hard. But like I said, it always makes me mad. But, you know, it's all right. But yeah, we, you know, it's kind of cool too, you know.
Yes. Is he practicing before the show? Do you see him warm up, you know?
No, he's a chameleon. He's like, honestly, a guy who he won't say much. He'll just kind of stay quiet. And then all of us, like, you know, like truthfully, he's just that quick. He just kind of looks at you, can kind of read who you are as a person. And then he's doing you on stage. I mean, it's pretty impressive, but yeah, I never really warms up. I mean, I think you know, he's just so fast between switching characters and switching voices. I've seen other, impressionists, and they kind of announce who they're going to do, you know, hey, this is an impression of De Niro or whoever.
Denzel Washington. Yeah.
They go into it. But with him, it's just, he can switch between, 50 people, and it's effortless. So it's, like I said, it's been cool working with him. It's fun, getting to know him, and just an all around great guy. And like I said, super talented. So.
Now, do you do impressions as well? Is that one of your fortes?
No, when I was younger, I would do like the hokey Christopher Walken and Arnold Schwarzenegger, the one, come on now, do it. Just the one that you've heard from every single comedian ever. And so I used to do a bit about the GPS. It was a true story. They were trying to sign celebrities to do the GPS. So then I did like a series of just like, like I said, the voices everybody kind of did. And then working with Frank, it was sort of like, well, I'll drop that bit because, one, you don't want to step on what he's doing. And two, he does it way better. So I just kind of wrote other stuff. But yeah, how about you? Do you do any voices or anything? Or
Well, I'm known as the world's worst rapper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice. I actually have a rap, a bit that I do. I do it. It's from my son's recruiting days when he got recruited all over the country to play football. Yeah. And it's a it's a bit based on a true story, because I rapped for Jim Tressel in his office.
And then your son went to Michigan.
Yeah, he didn't get offered at the Ohio State University. He's like,
Mom, I don't think I want you coming on any more recruiting trips.
And, people love that bit. I had actually not done it for a while. And one of the Calm Keys events that we're going to talk about later, somebody had showed up that I know. And she said, oh, my gosh, I love that OSU bit you do, that rapping bit. And I said, that's so funny because I haven't done it in a long time and it's on the set list tonight. She was like, yes. It's
so funny how you just forget about, especially from the pandemic, how much material you forget to do or just put off to the side and you start working on other stuff. Because it's the same way. I kind of flip through notebooks and I go, man, I forgot about this whole section or whatever. And it's kind of crazy how just how much good stuff you kind of forget, or especially, you don't have time to do. Mm-hmm. It's always fun bringing them back. It's always cool after, a year or two, you slip it in and you go, it still works. That's kind of cool.
Or it's like, oh, wow. Now I remember why I quit doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That has happened too.
More often than I'd like to admit.
I also like how bits can evolve over time as you evolve in your craft. That early version may not be as crisp, but you knew something was there and it got some laughs, and then you sharpened it and some word economy, practiced it on different locations with different audiences, and then the rendition maybe 10 versions later is like, that's it, and it works every time.
Or you write something that you're not quite sure where to put it. Where does it go? And it's like a puzzle piece. One day you write a bit and you go, oh, I can do that. And then I can bring this old thing back. And then it all flows together. But yeah, I think Jay Leno said that, like, never throw anything out, because you never know, when you're going to be able to go back and use it. It's sometimes just a big puzzle piece, a big mystery, but so much fun. That's what makes it, fun, is just the challenge of figuring it all out.
Figuring it all out. Yeah, you've also performed in some really cool different arenas there, Andy. One I'm really curious about, because I've not done it yet, is you have performed on cruise lines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've done that. And I'm curious. I'm sure the laughers are, too. What is a typical schedule like for a comic that gets that kind of gig? How many shows are you doing and how long are you cruising?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of depends on kind of the cruise line. I was spoiled and kind of got in with Norwegian Cruise Line, and they pretty much spoil you from the minute you start working with them till you keep going. They typically fly you in somewhere a day early, so you're usually going to like Miami or Seattle, or sometimes I've been flown out to like St. Thomas, you know, out in the Caribbean, and that's always cool because then you got a day to just kind of walk around and kind of explore. But it typically depends on the contract, you know. Typically they try to keep it a minimum of 2 weeks. But you know, obviously there's longer contracts that go, you know, six weeks or whatever, but just having the family and stuff, I try to keep it at about 2 or 3 weeks, just so I'm, you know, two or three weeks away from the kids. It's a long time. So try to find a nice balance. But, what you do is you do anywhere between 5 to 190 shows. I mean, it all really kind of depends sometimes, especially these, transatlantic ones where they fly you overseas to Europe and then you kind of take the boat back to the US. There's a lot of sea days. There's like 4 or 5 sea days. So sometimes other acts can't go on, whether it's just getting seasick, or you know, a lot of times there's like a magic show where they're throwing knives, you know, so they don't really want people throwing knives when the sea's going crazy. So they cancel that. And then, you know, most of the times they put the comics on. So, but they're all short sets. They're about a half hour long, which isn't too bad. It's a nice little taste, but every show is sort of like different because you got to do a different act in a theater show. And then there, you know, you do a couple club sets and get a lot of repeat people, which is nice. You know, it seems like people really enjoy going to the comedy. So you always want to try to slip something new in, just because you never know who's seen what. And like I said, they take care of your travel, and you know, obviously being chubby, the best part's the buffet. I love doing hanging out there the whole time. And but yeah, it's really a fun, you know, like I said, I never thought I'd be a comedian, let alone traveling all over the world. So they definitely spoil you, and you know, certainly don't take those trips for granted, for sure.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. So is there like a family friendly set and then a late show? Is that typical?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty squeaky clean anyways, but you know, they bill it as an adult show, and truthfully, all they really want you to be is funny. You know, I mean, some comics really take advantage of it, you know, and they're you know, obviously a lot dirtier than I am. And, but you know, especially working kind of cleaner, I just kind of tell them up front, like, hey, I look like a teddy bear. I'm not going to be that dirty. It's not going to work. And they kind of laugh. And then I just kind of do my normal set. And for the most part, they enjoy it. But yeah, you do one in like a theater. So the theater, or two, I guess, in the theater. And it's like a 600 to 800 seat theater. And it's usually packed. So you got to have a different 20-minute set in there. And then your club set, you need about 30 minutes. I try to stretch, you know, hopefully try to get 45 or 50 in the club just between switching stuff up. And then they usually have you do like a welcome aboard show that's, you know, 7 minutes or something. So you're always kind of doing, you're playing kind of chess in your brain. I guess it's easy to kind of, overthink it, because, you know, you see one person in the crowd and you go, oh, everybody's seen this already, you know? And so, but it's like, oh, it's just one person, you know? And so you kind of get in your head a little bit, just trying juggling the material. But for the most part, it's really fun. And like I said, traveling, getting to see different places around the world, has been really kind of cool.
That was interesting to me about what you just said about getting in your head. I think about that a lot too, because I can get inside my head. But then I know when, you know, as a producer too, I'm booking comedians, and, you know, I'll have great comedians come back again. And yeah, they'll be the same way, thinking too much inside their head, or, you know, overthinking it. And the irony is, even as an audience member, if it's a really great joke, when they bring it out again, I'm like, oh God, I know what this is. And I can't wait. This is going to be so great. They did it again.
You know? Sometimes that's what happens, is somebody don't really see you and they go, man, that's so funny. I got to tell my friends that are on the ship. And then they all come back and they kind of want you to do that joke. You know?
Yes.
So, you know, but in your brain, you're going like, well, they saw it already. They probably want to see something different. So, it's easy to get in your head. And, you know, just right before the pandemic, I did one, and that was, like, I finally just was like, you know what, I'm just going to do it and just not worry too much. And, you know, it's, your act is way better when you're loose and you're having fun. So it's, like I said, you can't really take it, you know, too serious or wind yourself up. It's good to just kind of relax and just do it. So, you know, that's what I've been trying to do. But like I said, they at least want you to break up the theater and the club, and then the rest you just kind of play. And that seems honestly what they want more is not really necessarily material, but they just want more like crowd stuff. You know, they kind of want people to just play, you know, play with you in the crowd. But it's so much fun. They really are fun.
They are fun. Yeah, I got, while you were talking, I was just thinking that's an interesting place to perform on cruise lines. And now I'm thinking of you, Bill. You performed in Pennsylvania prisons. Where?
Yeah, I turned down the cruise. I'm like, let me stop the evening.
You're like, yeah, forget the Caribbean. I'll hit the clink.
Exactly.
And you had a heckler that was a service dog. Can you describe?
Actually, it was the weirdest thing is I did one prison a couple years ago out. It wasn't Fargo. It was like Jamestown or something. It was way out in Dakota, and it was just freezing horrible. Go figure. And it went great. The warden was like a laid-back California guy. I'm like, what are you doing out here? And he kind of, I couldn't decide what I was going to go with to make fun of him, but he was like, yeah, you can make fun of me. They'll love it. And so basically I called him Macaulay Culkin, and all the inmates loved it. And we just had a ball. But the best part was one, there were service dogs. They trained service dogs at a lot of prisons, which I'm just enamored with. I think it's so cool. And while I was doing something, one of the dogs was up front and just started licking himself. And I'm like, okay, perfect. Since I've made it. So then I got offered a tour of Pennsylvania prisons, and I'm like, oh, this prison was so much fun. This will be the same thing. It wasn't. So it was hard because you're told you have to be clean. And they do not want that. The prisoners do not. And it depends on the level of the prison, their minimum, their maximum, whatever. And some weren't all that horrible, but as comedians, we always remember the worst ones.
Right.
So, yeah, there were a couple people getting up to leave at the worst one. It's like they're prisoners. The only place they can go is back to their cells, still walking. And the best part is where you go, the way it's set up in the bleachers, because they don't have a nice place to do it. So the sound is horrible, too. Everything is against you. That's my excuse. But the door to leave is right by me. So they have to walk by me to leave so I can hear their conversations. I can listen to their disappointment as they're leaving, much like we're going to have dancing. Except the music will be going, so it'll be harder to hear them complain. But I still remember when this one guy going, man, I don't have enough toilet wine in myself for this. So, yeah, it was cool.
Oh my God. Well,
now, if I can just find a prison cruise, I'm in.
You'll be a hit.
Yeah. We have like a state correctional cruise line. I'm your guy.
Now, that's a picture. That's a picture for sure. You guys, this is, you know, this is to me amazing that we get to spend some time with you and have some comedians that have done some dry bar specials. I'm curious, what is the process that comedians have to go through to submit to dry bar in order to land a special? Can you both speak on that?
It's actually Andy got it first. He kind of basically talked me through it, but I think basically Andy, it just basically comes down to sending a squeaky clean video where people are laughing and they can hear you. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how the process is now just because it's changed so much, but cause I think as I'm like season two or season three, it was still relatively newer. It was starting to get a little bit of heat, but it hadn't really blown up as much. But basically the process is, you know, you kind of have, if you know a comic who's done it, it's good to kind of use them as a reference, obviously, if they can recommend you for it. But at the time I had to basically send about 30 minute tape in that had to be squeaky clean and basically show them this is what I kind of want to do. And you know, and then obviously they kind of wrote back like, great, you know, you're good to go. And so when I was doing it, they were still like 45 minute specials. So they would fly you in and you would tape two shows and, you know, jam packed and, you know, obviously they really kind of push the clean. They almost kind of send you like a kind of dry bar seminar where they tell you, this is what you can say, this is what you can't say, whatever. And, so yeah, you know, you tape it and then, you know, you basically wait, you know, whatever, 5 months or whatever till they have it edited. And then you kind of watch it and you kind of ask them to take things in, take things out, you know, jokes that you didn't think hit or, you know, didn't go as well as you wanted them to. But or just, you know, the camera angle was weird or something. But yeah, I mean, it was such a great experience. I mean, everybody at that company is just so nice and you know, just really treat you well. The crowds are really fun. You know, they're really pumped up that you came out. But yeah, I mean, and I don't know how they've changed it, because I think it's down to like 20 minutes or 25 minutes now or something. So I imagine it's probably the same process where you just send your best, you know, 15 or 20 minute clean clip. And trick is just having persistence, you know, just keep bugging them. And, you know, because obviously there are a lot of comedians to consider, and you know, sometimes it's just a numbers game on how, you know, who can get them and who can't. But you know, that's all I would do is just keep bugging them until they say yes. So yeah,
they are shockingly nice. They are so nice that you're like, is someone playing a joke on me? As a matter of fact, the one, I don't know what her title was, she's moved up, but the one I was dealing with the most even brought her puppy in for me to play with. I mean, how cool is that? I know.
I love
and
that.
And I had so many questions about like what constitutes clean, because everybody has different definitions. And so finally she's like, well, do you want to host the show the night before? And then you can get a feel for it. I'm like, absolutely. And honestly, I think I had more fun hosting than I did doing my shows the next night, because it was just free form playing whatever. And like Andy said, the crowds are just so excited. Everyone's so appreciative. I don't know what it is. I mean, fortunately, Andy did his, what, two seasons before I did mine, something like that. And we were both fortunate to get in before they had to put in COVID restrictions. I don't know what it's like, you know, dealing with that where the room isn't as full and, you know, they had to do everything for that. But yeah, it was a really incredible experience. You complain about so much in life, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, I'm being flown across the country to tell jokes. How crazy is that?
Yeah, I've heard that before. Joel Byers just recently filmed his. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but
oh, I hate that guy.
He's great. he was remarking that same, you know, saying the same thing, how nice they were. And that's really good to hear. I did not realize, though, that you had some say in the final edited version of your special. So that is really kind of encouraging to hear. That
the one advice I would give to anyone that I wish I would have done, and out of habit, I record every set. And they ask you right after you come off stage, what do you think? What do you want to use? Whatever. And then they'll hit you up with email. Mm-hmm. But if I had just kept the recorder in my pocket, I could have had a better judgment of what hit, what didn't ahead of time to speed up the process and to help out. So I always tell people, if you're going to do that, just, you know, if you're wearing a jacket or whatever, just keep it in your pocket and then you'll have a good idea for when they come to you later.
Yeah.
Look at me. That is two serious answers in a row.
I know. I didn't even know you. I didn't know you had it in you.
I must not be feeling well.
You're doing great. Was there anything in that whole process that really stood out and surprised you in from beginning to end?
Just the nerves, I think, of taping. You know, you've done this act for 10 years and you know, I mean, you travel with it every single week and you just think, it's just a normal show. But when there's a camera right in front of your face, you know, it's easy to kind of, again, you get in your head of this has to be perfect. This has to be, it's got to be perfect. And so you start kind of putting, you know, pressure on yourself that really doesn't need to be there. You know, the crowd, like I said, they want you to succeed. They want you to do well. They're there for you. And so it's sort of like the same thing. Once you get that first laugh, you kind of go, all right, I can just relax. This is supposed to be fun. And so I think the night leading up to it, you know, and same for any other kind of taping that I've done. It's just, yeah, you just have that sleepless night of like, all right, I got to be perfect. You know, it's like I said, they do such a nice job of just welcoming you there and everything. But, you know, the editing, all that stuff, it's, you know, just, you know, it's something, again, you look back and you know, really appreciate that life is that cool that you get to do those things. So, yeah, I hope you get a chance to do it because it's so much fun.
Yeah, me too. That'd be exciting. Looking forward to that one day. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. You guys are a lot of fun. We send out forms for comedians that want to be a part of our shows. And one of the questions we ask is to have them share a fun fact with us about them. So, Bill, your dad spoke 4 languages and your mom 7. Where are your parents from? And did their gift of linguistics get passed on to you?
From Turkey. And so many cultures overlap that people just speak natural, you know, different languages. And even my mom didn't know English and thing when they moved to America, and she taught herself by watching television, which is incredible until you realize what was on. So, yeah. And fortunately, my oldest brother, he was born there, and he was like 1 year old when they came here, and he used to speak Turkish and lost it. And I got D's in high school German. So, no, it didn't pass along. It's not really a family trait. but they were, I mean, as a prom date said once when she met my family, she said, I would have never guessed you came from intellectuals. So, so that explains a lot.
It explains a lot. So you just have one language that you know. That's,
yeah, on a good day.
That's good. You know, I went to Turkey once. Yes, I did. I went on a mission trip there in 1999. And we were mostly in Ankara, but we did have a few days in Istanbul, which was really great. And we would go on college campuses and talk to students who were delighted to meet Americans and said that they learn about American culture, way of life, and who we are by watching our TV and movies. I said, oh, no.
Well, and I understand the show Cruisin', where they go to Ohio parking lots and talk to people in front of their cars, is huge in Istanbul.
Really?
No, I made that up. What are you talking about? Hey, I did go actually when we were really little, and it was probably a mistake by my parents because, well, maybe my older brother could appreciate it. I couldn't. I was so young. But we actually went to Turkey as kids. And I have 2 memories. One is throwing baseball on the islands. And it was like being a major leaguer because back then no one knew what it was. So all these people just circled us like, what are you doing? And there's a language barrier. But I still remember dropping one and I'm still haunted by it. And then the other thing is they have the islands in the Mediterranean Sea and the Bosphorus. And it's really beautiful. And they have, well, they did. Now, this is way back. But they have like people with donkeys and they have these baskets carrying fresh bread and all sorts of different stuff that they're selling. And I still remember looking and one of those big long bread sticks, I guess you would call it loaves, fell out. The guy picked it up, looked around, dusted it off, and stuck it back in. And I still remember that. It's not the donkey gas that got me. It's the fact that the sand.
The loaf of bread.
So I haven't really spent a lot of time internationally since then.
Deterred. That's okay. That's okay. Now, Andy, I understand you are an avid Detroit Red Wings collector. How did you get interested in that? And what is the most interesting item you've collected so far?
I do all kinds of nerdy sports card shows and signings and just wait in line to get pucks and sticks signed. I'm such a nerd, but I love it. It's so much fun. When I was a kid, the Red Wings were actually good. They won some Stanley Cups, and it was easy to get into the games and stuff. And so, truthfully, I kind of got into it. When I was a kid, I had a summer job and just pretty much worked the entire summer just trying to save money for college. And found out that one of the Red Wings was signing autographs at the local hockey card store, and I was so excited. But, and I just remember my dad was sort of like, "Yeah, you've been working all summer. Is there anything you want to do?" And I kind of mentioned that the store's having a signing, and he was like, "Yeah, we got to go. Let's go." So I went and got a little hockey picture signed, and then it's turned into way too much stuff. You know, my house is looking like a memorabilia shop now. It's all, pucks and display cases and gloves and all kinds of stuff. And so, nerdy hobby, but it's something I love doing. And, I actually just worked with Bill on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then I went to a hockey card show on Sunday. So he was making fun of me the entire drive up. And it's just a little fun thing I like doing. So, and probably the craziest, I don't know, I got a lot of game used sticks that I like, you know, like the stuff that players actually played in games. So kind of nerdy, but it's fun to have. So
come on, what's the favorite one?
I have Paul Coffey was my second favorite player growing up. So I have a game used Paul Coffey stick that's downstairs in the basement.
Then what's my favorite one of yours?
Which one?
Andy had a Zamboni piggy bank. I cannot get over that. I don't know how many years ago you showed that to me. I still can't get over it.
Yeah, I still have it somewhere.
did you put money in the Zamboni?
No. Just kept it
a little. Oh, that'd be silly.
But Bill, I put all my quarters in there and shake it up and make a wish and then dump it out all over. But just too much stuff. Like I said, my wife, bless her heart, has a lot of patience for all the boxes that come in the mail of just Red Wing stuff. And so we have just too much stuff. But
by the way, I have one piece of hockey memorabilia.
He does.
That came in the mail. It's a puck signed by Andy Beningo.
That is true. Which will be famous one day. That's great. Right.
Anytime he plays hockey, I ask if he scored any goals because I don't want to ruin the value of this one.
Right. That's great. I
signed it, so the value does absolutely nothing to it. that I signed it.
Now, do the sticks that you have by the players, do they sign those? Are they signed sticks, or
are signed, some aren't. But it kind of depends. It's kind of a nerdy hobby. I like it.
Yeah, I didn't know I liked hockey.
I'm in all these like Facebook groups, and it's all fellow nerds just trading sticks and pucks and all kinds of stuff. But it's sort of like saying you're in the Dungeons and Dragons or something, but just sports memorabilia
with less teeth.
Yeah, with less
teeth. Less teeth. That's true. I know. I didn't know I liked hockey until I lived in Michigan and I went to one of the Michigan State University hockey games, and I was right up against the glass, and the pucks are coming flying at you, and they're checking each other into the thing, and I was like, this is great. Love this. Yeah.
It's such a fun game. I don't think people know the rules, and I think that's what confuses most people because of all the lines and stuff like that. And I think that's where a lot of people find the love of it, is once you're actually there and there's the atmosphere, and it's such a fast paced game. It's easy to get into. So I got into it when I was a little kid, and I have a show tonight, and I'm actually mad because the Red Wings are on. So I'll probably miss the game, but I'll be checking the score during my set or something. That's probably what I'll end up doing. But all good.
And your wife hasn't relegated all the memorabilia into one room. You get to spread it throughout the house.
So it's in the basement. There's just a lot of disapproval head shakes, a lot of squinting the eyes, and just, it started off as kind of like something cute of like, oh, you got another package. And now it's like, oh, you got another package, you know, it's basically turned into that. And it's, yeah, it's all pretty much in the basement. So I kind of have my man cave going.
It works out though. Don't let him, because that way his kids will have something to stare at when they can't afford to go to college. That's
why go to school when you could have a game used Paul Coffey stick?
Exactly.
They're crying, going, I don't even know who Paul Coffey is.
That's great. Well, as we wrap up here, can both of you share with the Laughers how they can follow you on social media or otherwise?
Yeah, you can follow me. You can go to my website. It's just my name, Andy Beningo, B-E-N-I-N-G-O. And Beningo was his name. Oh, that's the easiest way to remember it. You can add me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Bingo Comedy. So you can, those are all my social media handles, and you can check out the Dry Bar special on YouTube and hopefully have some laughs.
And you, Bill?
Pretty much the same thing. Go to andybeningo.com. No, it's my name, billbaranque.com. That's the website. And then, yeah, it's my name for all the social media stuff. YouTube, there's the Fired Sports Guy series. There's the Dry Bar special. There's stupid other videos that I've done. A couple with Andy, actually. We've done a couple together. So, yeah, hit us up.
Hit them up. Thank you, Bill and Andy. This has been so super fun, and I loved having both of you on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Yes, and laughers, you will have a chance to catch these hilarious comedians perform right here in the Valley Saturday, November 13th at our ComKeys event at Friendly City Dance Room on Court Square in Harrisonburg, Virginia. It's part X2 comedy show, part dance lessons. Philip Fusaro from the Dance Room will teach you Kazumba, a partner form of dance originated from Africa. And these comedians, along with myself and JMU professor Chris Womack, will have you fill in that dance hall with laughter. Buy your tickets to this event today. We'll be sure to put that information in the show notes as well, and we will see you there. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.